Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We'll routine to border scenes, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off the mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
But if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hee hee! King Shaziz the Terrible! All rise for King Shaziz the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table!
April 12th, 2016. The time is 9:22 p.m. and this is Pink reporting. Good evening, everybody. Here's the second video of the evening. The Geoengineering Escalation of 2016, Accounts of Chemtrail Flu Rise. This was posted on April 12, 2016 by Admin. The Era of Wisdom by Cassius Kamarampi. Have you been feeling ill lately? Perhaps you feel mentally foggy, feverish, congested, or weak in the heart. Are you experiencing itchy skin? Okay, some of you out there, have you been feeling ill? If so, you might want to carefully monitor your onset of symptoms and see if they immediately follow aerosol spraying in the sky. It's hard to believe, but this is happening. People all over the U.S. have been reporting a blatant, easily observable escalation of geoengineering chemtrail activity in the past 3 months, often followed by flu-like symptoms. I'm going to call this the geoengineering escalation of 2016. And if you're not familiar with chemtrails geoengineering, you might want to research the well-documented and easily verifiable history of the U.S. government experimenting on citizens with biological creations often sprayed out of airplanes. From the 1966 San Francisco spraying of bacteria on unsuspecting civilians to the 1955 Operation Dropkick, which released infected mosquitoes on poor African-American populations in Georgia and Florida without their knowledge or consent. A comprehensive timeline of experiments on U.S. citizens can be found here. For the geoengineering aspect of chemtrails, widely considered to be the more prevalent application of aerosol technology, you could watch Dane Wigington and his team of experts at Shasta County Town Hall, or this 2005 documentary entitled Aerosol Crimes, or the wildly popular What in the World Are They Spraying documentary, or Peter A. Kirby's comprehensive history of geoengineering, either in audio form or article form. Now, I highly recommend that you watch What in the World Are They Spraying documentary if you haven't done so yet. It's highly informative. Note, chemtrails for geoengineering altering the weather and chemtrails for biological purposes are understood to be two different things. They are difficult to differentiate, so for the purposes of this article, we will use the slang term chemtrails. Aerosols sprayed out of aircraft can be used for many things. This is my personal experience. About 3 months ago, I started noticing heavy chemtrailing in my area, Sacramento, California. I took several videos, and the audio is taken out. I was just exclaiming how intense the trails were, and this is the first set of videos I took in February 2016. And here's the video. You're welcome to check that out. All right? Then one day, about a month ago, we received a wave of chemtrails that far surpassed anything I've ever seen. As an observant lover of the sun and outdoors, it was blatantly obvious to me when this new phase of spraying kicked off in early 2016. This video was recorded on March 15, 2016, and here it is, the worst chemtrails I've ever seen. All right. My friends in South Carolina, Houston, Cincinnati, and all over California experienced a wave of spraying at the exact same time. Facebook groups and online communities dedicated to monitoring aerosol activities exploded with photographic evidence and theory. Fellow writer and researcher Brandon Tubville of Florence, South Carolina, had this recent account to contribute. Basically, at about 6:30 a.m., I noticed heavy chemtrailing over the horizon. By 7:30, the chemtrails were as thick and heavy as you see in the picture. By about 8:30, the horizon was completely milky white. For the rest of the day, the entire sky was covered in a thick white haze. This lasted for the entire day. Toward the end of the day, and in the morning of the next day, myself and many other individuals in the area began exhibiting signs of what appeared to be allergy attacks and respiratory illness. It was that strange feeling that you were coming down with something, but you were not actually sick, just exhibiting the symptoms of being sick. In other words, burning, watery eyes, burning, itchy nose, sneezing, coughing, and something deep within your lungs. The chemtrails have continued, although not to the same extent as the day in question, and so has the illness. It seems that the heavier the spray, the worse the illness tends to be, and the more people it tends to affect. Like many across the U.S., including renowned geoengineering researcher and author Peter A. Kirby, I didn't see as much chemtrailing activity in 2015, and the last time it was this severe in Sacramento was probably 2013, with the exception of certain bursts of activity. Further up in Northern California, leading geoengineering researcher and conservationist Dane Wigington observed a much more consistent program of spraying in the last several years. And the symptoms include, the chemtrails this time have an extremely distinct smell. I've never actually been able to notice any odor from them, but this time, there is the same distinct odor every time spraying occurs. They smell starchy, like needles to the nose, a little bit metallic, kind of hospital-like, although I can't quite put my finger on an accurate comparison to the smell. And every time someone opens a window during spraying in a house in my area, the whole house will get filled with this odor. It's a powdery, metallic, starchy, irritating to the nose odor that seems to settle and largely disappear within 24 hours of windows being opened. And it seems to be occurring every day, only becoming less noticeable when there are true rain clouds in the sky. And for some reason, the smell is gone when thick rain clouds are in the sky. Every time I get exposed to the smell, it's followed by an onset of flu-like symptoms. Experiencing this firsthand is very clear indication to me that these aerosols are causing the flu-like symptoms. I also experience itchy skin, dry skin, and some kind of red bumps on my shoulders, back, and arms that were not there before February. There's a reason why people are making videos about chemtrail flu right now, recounting stories that parallel mine, and there's a reason why they would get thousands of views on YouTube so quickly. We're all going through some kind of escalation of aerosol spraying right now, and for example, here's another person's recent recollection of chemtrail flu and their remedy, published on March 3rd, 2016, and you're very welcome to check this video out, folks. I do not take credit for any of these videos. They're credited to the YouTuber who made them. Here's another recent observation of this chemtrail flu, and here's another, and you can click on either one of those links right there. Geoengineering is widely believed to be the primary reason for chemtrails altering the weather, but why is this causing these flu-like symptoms? People who understand chemtrails contain barium, aluminum, strontium, and other heavy metals recognize that these materials make us sick too, but it would seem as if there's some kind of biological component to this newest cocktail of toxins being rained down upon us. And at this moment I write this, I feel another wave of flu-like symptoms that seem to disappear before I get a full-blown cold. Thank you, good health, natural diet, and exercise. I'm feeling mental fog, an unusual dull pain in my chest, a clogged up feeling in my lungs, congestion in the back of my throat, a metallic taste in my mouth, and dizziness. It's not unbearably intense as I predict it would be if I were going outside more often and breathing this in more, but I've been making efforts to avoid it. Others around me are doing a bit worse. And hopefully this info helped. Please don't hesitate to speak up about chemtrails, and please carefully observe your health to see if your flu-like symptoms are preceded by a heavy spraying in the skies. Perhaps you could sit down and watch one of those videos or documentaries with a family member. That's a very good idea, folks. Okay? Many people with a healthy sense of observation and reason have been correlating aerosol activity with these flu-like symptoms, and this wouldn't be the first time that our government tested biological materials on us. And it's underlined for a very good reason. They have done this, and they continue to do it. And if you weren't aware, chemtrail-conscious country musician Merle Haggard died of pneumonia last week. Many speculate it was due to this chemtrail flu, though the correlation is not yet definitive. And on a personal note, a girl I went to high school with in Texas died of an asthma attack last week after accounts of heavy spraying in Houston, San Antonio, and Central Texas. May her soul rest in peace. And I'm not sure if there's a correlation there. But anyway, folks, please share this with as many people as possible. Click the links, do the research, and pay close attention. The mainstream media never dares speak of things like this and have remained silent throughout the last 6 decades of aerosol crimes happening to us until the incidents were impossible to deny. And I know many of you are familiar with chemtrail spraying. It has not stopped. It continues every single day. And this is going to be a little snippet of this video. I'm going to try to click on it right now to play it just for a couple of minutes, or maybe shorter than that, just to show you the chemtrail spraying for those of you. And yes, it's unbelievable, but there are people that still deny that these are intentionally being sprayed on us. And the government has been doing experiments on the American people for a very long time, and they're probably continuing to do it right as I speak. And they're probably introducing things like lithium and things of other nefarious origins into our air. And you can oftentimes smell very strange smells. And that only means one thing, folks. Chemicals and toxins. Very dangerous.
When plunder becomes a way of life,
men create for themselves a legal system that authorizes it and a moral code which glorifies it. Taxation is theft, and theft by any other name is still theft. We now interrupt this video to bring you the inescapable reality and complete entanglement of taxation in poetic format. Enjoy. Taxes land, taxes bed, tax the table at which he's fed. Tax his tractor, tax his mule, teach him taxes are the rule. Tax his work, tax his pay, he works for peanuts anyway. Tax his cow, tax his goat, tax his pants, tax his coat. Tax his ties, tax his shirt, tax his work, tax his dirt. Tax his tobacco, tax his drink, tax him if he tries to think. Tax his cigars, tax his beers, if he cries, tax his tears. Tax his car, tax his gas, find other ways to tax his ass. Tax all he has, then let him know that you won't be done till he has no dough. When he screams and hollers, then tax him some more. Tax him till he's good and sore. Tax his coffin, tax his grave, tax the sod in which he's laid. Put these words upon his tomb: taxes drove me to my doom. And when he's gone, don't relax. It's time to apply the inheritance tax, accounts receivable tax, building permit tax, CDL license tax, cigarette tax, corporate income tax, dog license tax, excise tax, federal income tax, federal unemployment tax, fishing license tax, food license tax, fuel permit tax, gasoline tax, which is currently 44.75 cents per gallon, gross receipts tax, hunting license tax, inventory tax, IRS interest charges, IRS penalties, tax on top of tax, liquor tax, luxury tax, marriage license tax, Medicare tax, personal property tax, real estate tax, service charge tax, social security tax, road usage tax, recreational vehicle tax, sales tax, school tax, state income tax, state unemployment tax, telephone federal excise tax, utility taxes, vehicle license registration tax, vehicle sales tax, watercraft registration tax, well permit tax, workers' compensation tax. Still think this is funny or no big deal? Not one of these taxes existed 100 years ago. And yet, our nation was the most prosperous in the entire world. We had absolutely no national debt, had the largest middle class in the world, and mom stayed home to raise the kids. So what the heck happened? Politicians, bureaucrats, and lobbyists. all infiltrating our country, making things unbearable. I realize when I pay my taxes that I only do this because if I don't, eventually men will be sent to my house with guns. If I continue to refuse payment, these men with guns will take me away by force and lock me in a cage. If I dare to resist these men with guns, they have been granted the right to shoot and kill me. And in this, I realize that every form of taxation, every form, is collected at gunpoint. Every form of taxation is a manner of theft. And like many anarchists before me, I understand that to justify robbery, one must merely call themselves the government. I'm an anarchist because I know the state does not exist by producing, but rather by stealing from those who do. I'm an anarchist because I believe that theft is immoral, and immorality cannot be tolerated in a just society.
Guys, thank you so much for watching my video. If you enjoyed it, give it a thumbs up and share it on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you want to see more videos like this, just click that big red subscribe button down there, and as soon as I upload a video, you'll be one of the first to see it. For bonus information and additional content, follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/highimpactflicks, on Twitter at highimpactflicks, and now on Instagram at highimpactflicks. Also, I want to invite you to click on this link right here. That'll take you to my brand new vlog channel. I'll be uploading content there that I won't necessarily put on this channel that I think you're really going to want to see. And I will see you guys in the next video.
In constant sorrow all through his day. Trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised. No pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble. I have no friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. Never expect to see you again. For I'm bound to ride that northern railroad. Perhaps I'll die upon this train.
Perhaps he'll die upon this train.
Sleeping in my grave,
while he is sleeping.
everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Apologize for yesterday's show. Caught a little bit short. Have a family issue. Got a mother and father-in-law who's up there in their age and had some health issues that we needed to address right shortly. And so with that said, that's why we kind of had to bail out a bit early. But we're here today and going to try to combine a bunch of stuff. Got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about in here. I played a little podcast at the beginning of the show having to do with chemtrails. Now, for, you know, folks out there who, you know, pretty much are under the impression that chemtrails are a conspiracy theory, I would suggest that maybe you really kind of look into it just a little bit more than normal. Just humor me for a bit and go out there and take a peek at your skies once in a while, and then, you know, get you a little notepad and jot down how you feel after certain events, such as you know, the tic-tac-toe pattern up in the sky and such. And so with that said, I posted a video over there from a lady, pink something or another, I can't remember what it was in there. I have trouble remembering all these doggone video names. But anyway, I posted a link in there for her where she's reading an article about chemtrails and what they were classifying as chemtrail flu. And, you know, could be something to it. Maybe not. I don't know. All I can say is that from when I was a kid looking up at the sky, I don't remember seeing all that kind of stuff. Now, keep in mind, we probably got more jets than we had back then. But I know the difference between condensation trails, ice crystals, and something being sprayed in the sky. It's blatantly obvious. And then when you have companies out there that advertise that they really do geoengineering, then now it's not such a conspiracy theory. Well, if you think way back during the farming days when they used to spray, well, they still spray crops with crop dusters, but back in the day when they wanted to try to make it rain, they'd spray silver iodide in the air to try to get the water molecules to combine and be heavy and fall down and, you know, water their crops. So it's not nothing new from somebody spraying stuff in the sky. And there's a big conspiracy out there about pretty much depopulating the planet, or, you know, other ones saying that it's for, you know, trying to geoengineer the planet so that we can fight the so-called global warming, which you don't want to get me started on, because once you get me on that subject, I get irate, because you just go listen to my podcast and you'll know why. I don't even want to get going. And the next video that I posted down there at the superchat.html on shazizradio.com, almost forgot my own website. A guy named Smoking Joe Trainer, I've been listening to him for quite a long time. He speaks a lot of common sense. I didn't play the podcast on air because he actually kind of dropped the S-bomb, and I try to keep it clean here on Shaziz Radio. But other than that, he's a really nice guy. But they're talking about that within the next 2 weeks, the economy of the United States crashing. Now, it remains to be seen whether it does or doesn't, but it falls into the next video down here in line about all the different Walmarts closing. The first time this came out, there was about 5 Walmarts. Now there's 159 Walmarts that have been closed. And, you know, a lot of strange goings-on in that general vicinity. Now, all this is leading up to something, so hold on there with me and, you know, relax. Don't get all riled up yet. Anyway, yeah. The last video that I put down there was one that I did play the podcast on there, and it's about taxes. And whenever you listen to the guy in this deal, he does it in kind of a poem form. He talks about taxes and all the different types of taxes. You know, a lot of folks think that living here in the United States is all hunky-dory. You know, we just got it so made and everything's wonderful. But in reality, go back 100 years, we weren't taxed nowhere near the range of what we're taxed now, and at the gauge of what we're taxed now, as far as that if you don't pay your taxes, then it's like a stage, step-by-step stage. You know, first they'll send you a notice, and then they'll threaten you a little bit, and then if it gets, you know, too far out of what they feel their comfort zone is, then they'll send men in black to kick your door down in and slap you around a bit and drag you off at gunpoint and throw you off in jailhouse till you decide you're going to pay your taxes. So submit and pay, or, you know, pay the consequences one way or another. So it's not always, you know, a really nice thing to be an American citizen. You know, you don't know enough about the law to know the difference between actually being an American citizen or just an American, you know, a sovereign American or whatever, you get yourself caught up in like things like Social Security cards and birth certificates and marriage licenses and all the fees there intertwined. And you got a corporation that essentially, you know, tells you if you drive down the road and they don't like something you did, that they can literally either, you know, fine you, take you to jail, or if need be, take your life away from you because you resisted or whatever. That's pretty much kind of society we're living in over here. And some folks in other countries pretty much live in the same kind of scenario, but they don't. It's more like, you know, if you're used to something, it doesn't seem as bad as whenever it's just kind of new to you, you know. So we're kind of catching up to the rest of the world on the mistreatment of the citizens of all these different countries. Anyway, on the science side of the news down there, there's a article that somebody, Anon8087, posted about the Daily Mail in UK. It's about a science tech video where they used a custom Tesla coil to literally create nano wire with carbon and stuff. It's pretty interesting. I'll have to look at that after the show. But either way, getting back to the subject at hand right there, you know, whether you think that there is or isn't a conspiracy to control the world, one has only got to look to see out there that a lot of people believe that a lot of things are going on in this world that shouldn't be going on. And a lot of people are fearful. A lot of people are going into prepper mode, and you know, some people are just like, it's so far out of control, it's just they either gotta self-medicate with alcohol, drugs, or whatever. And you know, I voice my concerns on this subject all the time because it's not just one single issue that we're dealing with. We're dealing with a whole lot of issues coming down the pipe at the same time. And whenever somebody tells you there's a boogeyman behind every bush, or Planet X is coming to smash you, or, you know, this comet, or maybe World War III, or there's a terrorist underneath your bed, or hiding out in your closet and all that kind of stuff, you know, that has got to play a toll on the average citizen's stress-wise and health issues and stuff like that. And then on top of that, if what these people are saying about the spraying the chemistry up there in the sky, you know, has any validity to it, then, man, we're really under the gun here. Not just in America, but all over the world. These folks out here who call themselves the global elite, the bankers or whatever, you know, when their system starts to crash, it's we the people who end up paying the price for it. We either got to bail them out and pay more taxes, or, you know, suffer the consequences. And there was also said in one of these videos about the Walmart issue that, you know, if you think about this logically and you think about how if the government knew that something could potentially happen, whether it was going to happen or not, they would pre-plan. You know, governments aren't stupid. They want to keep continuity of government. And so they'd pre-plan for, you know, just such an emergency, and they'd get people to work with them, such as maybe Walmart, because Walmart has big facilities with a large parking lot and, you know, tunnels underneath them for certain different things or whatever, you know, and even airports and, you know, strategic places throughout the deal. One of the things that people overlooked during the whole Jade Helm thing was we saw a lot of military equipment going out, but we never saw it going back. They're actually supposed to have another Jade Helm 2 sometime under kind of a different name. But either way, when people, your average Joe, see these kinds of things, they got questions asked. You know, there's supposed to be transparency in government. You know, they're working for you, and you're supposed to be able to trust your government's got your best interests out. But whenever questions aren't getting answered, or mainstream media makes it look like you're stupid for asking the question, then those questions get a little bit more, it changes from just a question to now it's a, you know, I'm suspicious kind of thing. So if they weren't intentionally starting off to make it look like they done something wrong, or weren't intentionally starting off for some devious plan to take over the world and round up American citizens or any citizens from any nation for that matter, because this is a worldwide thing. This isn't just here in America. I'm just coming from my point of view because that just happens to be where I stand at this point. That's where I live. And so when you look out there into the world and you watch all these different things and you listen to the social media and then you actually pay attention to, like, you know, Facebook and all the different people out there. I observe people all the time. You know, it's I always want to see how people are acting and reacting to things and how they're treating each other. And I've watched a serious decline in society for, it just seems like it escalates every single year. Gets more intense, like somebody, you know, will jump off the gun and get all mad and want to fight for something just so insignificant, way less than what it was before. So you can tell that the stress level and the health decline of the citizens out there has gone downhill. And when you hear children cursing their families on Facebook and mothers cursing their children back and out right out there in public for all to see, because folks, when you put something on the internet, it's on the internet. You know, you don't just get up there and delete something, because there's a cake out there. It's there's copies of copies of copies. They bounce from server to server. And so it's out there, and it'll probably be out there forever now. So if you're out there treating your family, mistreating your family like that, and everybody else coming up around sees all these people out there throwing the F-bomb at each other and, you know, just talking down to each other like dogs, well, you know, hey, that's the norm. So, you know, we get used to that kind of stuff, just like we would get used to military standing on the street corner supposedly keeping the peace. Now, in a free and true world, we wouldn't have to have military standing on there, and probably would very rarely ever see a police officer, you know, because, you know, they ain't nothing to worry about. You, if you need them, you call them, and they come, and if not, then, you know, you just walk around and do your business. But not today. Today, your police officers don't look like police officers anymore. They're hard to distinguish between the military or even private mercenary groups like Blackwater and stuff like that. You don't know who's who or what's what. You know, the FBI, CIA, DEA, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. You know, it goes on and on. So many different agencies with people carrying guns around, but all government related. And yet here you got people that are continuously trying to grind away at what would be the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution that says clearly the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It doesn't say no ifs, ands, or subsection A, article B under the fine print in microscope D or whatever like that. It just says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The founding fathers of this country saw it fit to put it in there with some wisdom, because if governments got out of control, the people needed to be able to be strong enough to be able to resume life and bring back their government under control. Well, you know, the way that things are demonized and propagandized throughout this entire society that we call America is just mind-boggling. You can't talk to most folks about a lot of things because you turn out to be a nutcase. You can't talk about common sense because a lot of people don't even know their rights. They don't know they have protections against a tyrannical government, because they're not taught that anymore. And it slowly but surely, incrementally, being taught false science in school and false history or whatever. And we the people, we can sit around and argue with one another over who was right and who was wrong, how terrible this country was when it was founded, and, you know, who was persecuted the most. But in reality, folks, we were all persecuted. It doesn't matter what color you was or what belief system you fell under back in the day or even in the modern day. If you weren't part of the elite banking system or corporations or, you know, big industries or whatever like that, they're going to walk right all over you, because the only thing they need you for is taxes, labor, and, you know, pretty much getting what it is that they want. You know, if a guy is filthy, stinking rich and he lives up in a mansion and has to get up and get his own toast and juice or something like that, well, then he's not necessarily so filthy, stinking rich, because it's better for the king to have somebody come and bring the food to him, a servant, you know. And so if there ain't no servants to the elite, then you don't have to worry about the elite being comfortable. And that's the deal. We've all become servants to the elite. We've become servants to everybody but one another. And it's got to come a time in this lifespan before it's all over, before it's too late, where we take control of this our nations, where we stop becoming servants to a slave type tax system that taxes everything, even to death. You have an inheritance tax. Even after you're gone from this earth, they're still pulling money from your pocket. And by God, if you can't trust the doggone man at the funeral home, he might be yanking your gold teeth when everybody's peeling out in your wedding ring or whatever. You know, the greed and the corruption, it's not just in the government. I've seen a lot of social videos where, you know, people will leave a purse sitting on a bench to see how many people would steal it. And it's shockingly terrifying to see that at least 8 out of 10 people in that video took that. All right? For whatever reason. But every so often you'd find one of them who would literally go out of their way to protect something and get it back to the original owner. And it's not because these people are all bad out there, you know, but their morals as far as the way they raised might not have been such a, you know, it's the difference between generations. If you go back to the 50s and then into the 60s and 70s and all the way up to the 80s and 90s and to the present day time, and if you actually lived through those eras and you saw how people talked to each other, men opening doors for women and, you know, yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am, whatever, you know, and being respectful to one another, you know. And then move up to the 60s and see how things were in there and just follow yourself through time and, you know, watch how people began to treat each other and how people are treated. And when you see people that look like they're physically ill, when you see people that are tired and they're stressed out and they're either alcoholed up or drugged up and tattooed from head to toe and spiky old hair, and some of them look like their face fell off dead up in the tackle box and got fish hooks all stuck in their, you know, it's just, come on man, there's got to come a time when common sense has got to come back. If it doesn't and we keep on the path that we're on, I sure wouldn't want to see what life's going to be like 20 years down the road, if we even have that opportunity to see it. So, you know, when I look at all these videos out here, these are something that you really seriously need to pay attention to. You need to seriously pay attention to who you're calling your king and who you're calling your representatives around the world. If they're spraying stuff in the sky, if there's even a remote question that there is spraying stuff in the sky, then people should be all over that, because you're breathing that into your lungs and your children are breathing that into your lungs. The plants are absorbing it up, you know. I've seen some odd things going on with the environment. I've seen plants and trees dying off and, you know, crazy weather changes and stuff like that. Don't believe it has anything to do with global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever else they're going to call it next week. But it's mainly because the fact is the science is not there, never has been there. But the overhaul craziness of it is their remedy is to charge you more taxes. More taxes on top of all the taxes that you already pay.
Amen.
And people trying to tell you that if you deny this so-called science, you should be thrown in jail. And what happened to the First Amendment? You know, the freedom of speech, the same freedom of speech that they used to call you foul-mouthed things and talk about how you should die, or you're just, whatever. You know what I'm saying, Raymond?
Yes, I do. I'm sitting here looking at an email I got last week, and it was a question. Can you answer this question? And after I read the question, I said, yeah, no problem. The question is, why is it? It doesn't mention taxes, okay? It mentions we have soldiers, men and women, that fight for the freedom of our country. And it's not talking about the United States. It says Canada, Australia, United States, Great Britain, whatever, you know, the UK. I mean, we try very hard to live a good life. Other people in other countries that don't have what we have, they think we have it better than we really do. The thing is, the question was, why is it that politicians can serve 4 years and retire at full pay, yet a soldier, man or woman, fights, puts their life, not their body, not their language, not their mentality, their life on the line to protect civilians.
Yep.
And yet, if they serve 30 years or more, they only get 50% of their pay for retirement. Some of them actually are homeless. But yet, an immigrant can come to this country that has never lived here before, never fought for this country, didn't fight anyone except just to get here, to get some of this free stuff, and they're giving free housing, Section 8 housing, free medication, and they're treated like royalty.
Well, Raymond, you got to understand, stuff's intentional.
I know, I'm not finished. The question is, why? And the answer is very simple. It's so simple. The answer is there are more people that vote for a living than there are people that work for a living that vote. The people that work for a living outnumber the people that vote for a living. However, the people that work for a living don't vote. That is the answer. You people out there, if you live in the UK, Australia, United States, whatever, if you live in a good free country, look here. If you don't work a day, you don't make money that day, they can't tax you for the money you didn't make. Okay, take the day off and go vote.
Yeah, and then there's a question of whether your vote's even counting anymore because of all the corruption.
Okay, that's the second point, okay? You're right. The thing is, if the people that work for a living, that are paying these taxes, stood up and voted, then, okay, what's going on now? Like, for example, Obama, his first campaign, his first presidency, I voted against him. Why? Because I knew he was not the right man for the job. But I only won of a very small percentage that took time off for it to go vote. So I didn't vote the second time because I knew it wouldn't count. No. It will count if we all, every one of us, get up and vote. It will count. They cannot mess with us. It's just this simple. Don't work. Don't pay yet. Wait a minute. What people don't understand, in this country, I don't know about Canada, Australia, whatever, but the United States, there was no personal income tax until the early 40s. There was no personal income tax, yet this country was run great. It did just fine. Personal income tax was passed because of World War II, and it was supposed to be for 1 year and 1 year only. And to my knowledge, which is very limited, it has never been renewed. It just continued because it was so easy to get people to forfeit a portion of their income to help support the war effort. But once the war was over, it continued. And people just kept doing it because they got used to it. You're complacent, laid back, to heck with it, let the government run the country. Duh, the government gives the working class people just enough benefits to keep them complacent.
Okay. Now, I got to address my agitator.
Okay, go ahead.
My agitator's back again. This must have been something I had to talk about false science. I said false science like creationism. To my agitator out there in the chat room right there, look, I don't care whether you're a believer or non-believer in a higher power, and I don't care whether you're a believer or non-believer in science itself. Nobody, not even you, there's nobody on this planet who even has a remote idea. Sure, they got some sort of theory and whatever, but nobody knows for sure one way or another, because you weren't there when the Big Bang happened or the flash that was spoken into existence, anything. So everything relies on faith. It doesn't matter whether you're a scientist, an atheist, an anarchist, or whatever. Everything relies on faith. If I choose to believe in creationism, that's my choice, and you know, let me have mine. This is my life, and you got yours. So you believe what you want to believe. I don't care. That's not my problem. My problem is this. We live in a world that together where there's a whole lot of craziness going on. We got to sort it out, because this craziness doesn't just affect the atheist. It doesn't just affect Christian. It doesn't just affect the Buddhist or the Hindu or the Muslim or any of the other known religions out there. It doesn't just affect the Democrats or the Republicans or the Libertarians or the Green Party or anything. This affects everyone. If they're spraying something in the sky, we need to know about it. If they're overtaxing us, we need to do something about it. If our elected officials aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, we need to put them out of office. It's we, the people, that have to be responsible enough to hold them accountable.
Amen.
So don't come on here bashing me because of my creationism. Don't. If I believe in God, then that's my choice.
Yeah.
If you believe in the Tooth Fairy or the Unicorn or Bigfoot or aliens, you know, hey, more power to you. If one shows up in my yard, I'll make sure I'll get a picture to you and let you know you were right.
Wait a minute. You leave the unicorn out of this, because the unicorn was real.
Well, I ain't seen one, Raymond. I've seen horses.
I haven't either. But I've read stories that to explain where the unicorn came from and why it does not exist anymore, and people research it. The unicorn did exist.
Well, I'm happy for it. Dinosaurs, they probably existed too. You know, dragons and all kinds. It doesn't matter. What does matter is, you know, sure, we can make observations, we can make things and prove it to the best of our abilities, what works and what doesn't work. But the divide and conquer out here is so ingrained. It's like a tick in the back of the neck of every single human being out there. It's like a giant parasite sucking on humanity that is just keeping us all fighting amongst each other. If you don't believe in creationism, so what? Shut up about it, you know? If somebody ain't cramming it down your throat, then don't get upset about it. If somebody wants to talk to you about the subject, fine. But right now, we got bigger fish to fry. We got people potentially wanting to kill us. We got people that we know are stealing from us. You know, and it goes on and on. You know, if you talk about how you want to be free, if you believe in sovereignty, if you believe in seeking solutions and trying to make this world a better place, it's time to put up or shut up. It's not time to sit up there at the table and argue with everybody because, hey, I don't like the color blue and you got it on your, you know, whatever. You see what I'm trying to point out here, Raymond?
Yes, I do. And what you just said, you've said many times, people don't realize what it means. Put up or shut up. Get your butt off the daggone couch and go vote.
Yeah.
You think it doesn't count. You think they're padding the ballot. If you get up and vote, all of us, e pluribus unum, if we all stand together, they cannot fight us. It's just that simple.
Well, that's the thing, and that's why the divisive measures are put in place. They don't call it destabilization of nations for nothing. They send agitators in, like the agitator in the chat room, you know?
Right.
So, you know, look, everybody who listens to Shaziz Radio knows I'm a Christian. I don't care. If you don't like my views or whatever, you know, so be it. You know, I'm on my own spiritual journey just like you are. You know, taking little digs at me like that, that's just ridiculous, because I'm going to be a Christian till the day I die. If I die and I turn to dust, I'll never even know the difference. But right now, if it makes me sleep at night, if it makes me happy, if I try to do unto others as I'd want them to do unto me, so be it. That's my world.
You know, what you just said reminds me, I've said this several times, more than twice, more than three times on this show. I'm not a Christian, okay? But I'm not an atheist. I am an agnostic.
Well, you know,
you and I get along just great, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Because you accept me for who I am, and I accept you for who you are. But I have my morals, and my morals say that if I don't know and I'm not sure, I would rather live my life as if there were a God, die and find out there was not,
yeah,
than to live my life as if there was no God, die and find out there was.
Well, I don't want to turn this into a religious discussion because it's not. But listen to this.
Here's the thing.
It all falls in all of this stuff falls into the same exact category. All right, everything that's going on out here, whether it be the conspiracy theories, the religion, or the politics. If you watch the people out there, they're running amok, they're hating each other, they're self-medicating each other, you know, and themselves, or some of them's jumping off of bridges and
I would like to answer what you just said prior to this, okay? We're not turning this into a religious conversation. We're trying to teach people morality. Do the right thing. It doesn't matter whether you're religious or not. It doesn't matter what religion you are. The thing is, do the right thing. Get rid of the crooks in your life. Let's vote the crooks out of politics and put honest people in there. That's what this country was started by, honest people getting tired of crooked people cheating them out of money. I mean, that's why we had the war with England. I mean, we were being taxed without representation. That's why the Civil War in this country was fought. The South was being taxed without representation. The Civil War was not fought over slavery. The war between the United States and England was not fought because we wanted to be free of England. We were being taxed without representation. And what's going on right now in the United States?
It's a ludicrous amount of tax.
We're being taxed without representation. Oh, you represent, you get to vote for your senators and your congressmen, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, right, we get to, but we're not doing it.
Well, and then that, and the way that they got the electoral college, and the doggone super delegates and stuff like that, the system's rigged before we get a chance to walk through the whole, play the whole game, Trump versus Hillary. Neither one of them are presidential deals, you know. It don't matter. I don't care whether you like either one of them. Some of them should be in jail and the others should be probably in the nut house. They shouldn't be running the country. But the fact of the matter is, the people out there got to wake up and pay attention to what the heck is going on, man. But they're spending too much time putting digs on each other, man.
Yep.
You know, we don't got time to sit around and dig each other because you don't like something, some idea that I got or way that I live by. You know? If the system is corrupt to the core, like Barry said, then we got to be the ones responsible enough to stand up. That's why at the top of the document that we call the United States Constitution, we the people is in super bold print. You know? It's up to us. And right now, you know, whether it be in the alternative energy industry or the environmental industries, or you know, any subject that you can bring up on this Knights of the Round Table, it all boils down to the same exact solution, and the solution is each and every one of us. It ain't going to be any government, because governments run amok. You give them too much money, you give them too much power, and this is what you get. This is the results of every single government, every single empire out there. Basically, will do whatever it takes to appease the people long enough until the people get so doggone fed up and crazy that they just have to go to war with themselves in order to try to, you know, mellow everybody out. And then the government, go back through history and look and see. It's the same people in charge throughout history. Their children and their grandchildren, you know, they were bred for it. And here we are still repeating the same cycles, and eventually it all come to a head, and we'll be fighting amongst one another. And that's why I keep getting aggravated when I get comments like that. So what if I'm a Christian? If you don't like it, if you don't like what I got to say, you don't got to stand around and argue with me over it. Go live your life. Be free, happy. Go fishing or roller skating or something. Take up bingo. You know, I'm out here trying to do whatever I can to try to put some good ideas out there on the table. And I want people putting their ideas on the table. Together, we can bring the solutions to the table that would hopefully get somebody motivated into building things that are needed to help people in third world countries. This is what it's about. It ain't about whether you're right or whether I'm right or who's wrong or whatever. It's about addressing the world that we live in, the world that we see before our very eyes. If the mainstream media is telling us the world is so terrible, and yet we're just going to sit back and, you know, tuck our head up underneath the blanket and peek out every once in a while, then we're not living our lives, are we? Nobody?
Nope. We're not.
Well, Steve, are you in here?
I am.
What do you think about this whole mess, man?
Well, I did have a thought about the IRS. You ever see the film Judge Dredd?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, that was pretty much judge, jury, executioner all in one shot.
Well, isn't that when people come to the to your business with guns and say, do what we tell you or we'll shoot you?
Yeah. Well,
Is that why they gave him a billion bullets?
Well, that's another thing. Why does the post office need a whole bunch of 9mm hollow points? What do they need them for? They got a lot of dogs out there attacking them these days, or what?
Geese, apparently.
The whole thing is, the system is not held accountable by we the people. If they are our representatives, if we do have a voice, then it's time to shout that voice out loud and as hard as we can.
E pluribus unum. One more time. We got to stand up.
Well, it used to be carpe diem, a seize the day, but it now seems to be carpe jugulum, where they just seize the throat and choke you.
Comment in the chat room says, Shaziz had everything given to him by others. All he does is copy and paste.
Holy cow!
Yeah, really.
It's obvious that, because I know you, it's obvious that this person has no idea, none whatsoever, who you really are. It's obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, a blind man could see that.
Well, let me tell you something about myself. I served my country in so many different ways, in so many different agencies. I've been in the military. I've been in the police department. I've driven for school districts. I've worked just multiple different agencies. I've been all over this planet. And through my entire life, starting back whenever I was a child, raised as very poor. I don't know if any of you have ever ate split pea soup, but it's something that, you know, maybe the first time ain't so bad. But after about a year or two of that, and cabbage, and crazy stuff like that, you get to learning how to respect the day that a piece of cornbread shows up on your plate.
Whoa. That's just it. That person doesn't know you, because you don't call cornbread cornbread. Cornbread to you is like T-bone steak.
Oh yeah, it was. And to this...
very often. So when you do, wow!
To this very day, when I have guests... yeah, go ahead.
So effectively what you're saying, Shaz, is the majority of your working career has been spent in one area or other of public service.
Yeah.
And so your entire working career has been pretty much dedicated to giving back to the community you live in, whether protecting it from violent assault by foreign powers, keeping the peace in the local area, or making sure kids get to school safely.
In sixth grade, there was a program called School Safety Program. You had this nifty little bright orange belt with a little badge that said School Safety, the AAA people put that together, where you actually stood at the crosswalk and you made sure that the younger kids could make it across the crosswalk and safely, and you'd hold them back and let them wait till the cars went by and that kind of stuff. I was a school safety guard whenever I was in sixth grade. I was,
and you took pride in that. That's your
yes,
you
I did.
Pride.
I was unarmed security. I was unarmed security. I was armed security. I'm not going to sit here and tell everybody all the different things. I tell you honestly, if you follow my life back, you can see that I didn't just talk about trying to do something decent in this world. I did it, you know. And I'm proud of my service to my country and my fellow humans out there. And I'm still trying to do the best I can. I'm 50 years old now. I ain't as healthy as I used to be, but I'm still trying to do what I can do to make things better, you know. And so, you know.
Hey, you're trying to help unpaid. Just like you took pride in wearing that orange belt with that badge, you did your job because you had pride in it. You were helping other people. This person that wrote that last comment you was just read, they have no idea who you are. You're still doing it right today. You're trying to help people get out of this rut of paying taxes for that to politicians that are using that money to support people that don't work and don't pay taxes so that they can get more votes so they can stay in their high-dollar jobs.
Well, I'll tell you, Raymond, honestly, I know what it's like to go a day or two without a meal, all right? Yeah. And I don't want anybody else to ever have to deal with that. And so if I know somebody out there in this world is going without a meal, I want to do whatever I can to try to at least point somebody in that direction. Please, somebody go over there. If you're close enough to help these people out, help them out. You know, and that's what everybody should be doing. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying I'm better than anybody else.
Now let's look at it from a slightly different perspective. Perhaps F is correct, and everything that's given to you is given by others, and you just need to copy and paste your signature into the bottom of that form and pay the amount of money that the people are asking you for. So maybe they do give it to you.
Well,
I mean, I get lots of people pieces of paper come through my letterbox that say, "Give me money."
All of the knowledge in my head came from people that taught me things that I learned in my life. The choices that I made, however, those were mine. All right?
Yeah.
I didn't have to choose to go into the military and serve my country. I could have stayed home and partied and done whatever. I didn't have to put my life on the line as a police officer for my community. I didn't have to do that. I didn't have to go out there and do any of the things I did. You know, but I chose, instead of letting drugs take me down to the dirt and become, you know, what people would classify as a low life in society, I chose to do something beneficial towards other people. And at sometimes, and even to this present day, sometimes it to my own demise, you know, when you think it doesn't take a toll on somebody after hearing people, you try to put something positive out and people sit there and dig on you continuously, you know, tell you how stupid you are, oh, that'll never work. Well, my answer to that out there is try it before you deny it, all right?
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what, Shazzy, is that article that I put up earlier about the Tesla coil being able to make nanotubes connect into wires. Effectively, what they've developed is a system where nothing is hardwired. And as soon as you energize that system, all of the connectors connect up. That's built-in redundancy.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that deal. I want to study that more because that's brilliant. There's so much more to this world than meets the eye, and it's up for us to either rediscover it because they may have had the technology in the past, or discover it. You know, folks, listen to me, please. I'm begging you, just listen to what I got to say for 1 minute. If you never heard, or even if you've listened, but you never really paid attention to what I've been trying to say all along, if you look out there into this world, we are standing on the greatest gift ever given, or, you know, accidentally created, if that's the way you want to go with it. You know, we are standing on the most beautiful piece of property with resources so abundant. And if we took care of this, if we worked in harmony with one another, if we worked in harmony with nature, we could literally bring about heaven on earth, a utopia, so to speak. We could literally build and design things that would have everyone living in comfort.
Literally.
And if you don't want to live in comfort, if you just love a bunch of chaos, take you and all the people that want to fight over to the other side of the globe and or the flat earth, whichever you believe it is, and beat each other down until you can't take it anymore. And then come back whenever you want, you know, want to be friends again or something. By God, we got to fix this planet. We got to fix each other. We got to help each other. I believe, and from my book of faith, I believe that we're here to be servants to one another. We're here to be caretakers of one another. You are your brother's keeper, you know, and sure, those animals outside, you've got to take care of them.
There's a fundamental flaw with that philosophy, that if we started working with each other instead of fighting against each other, then there's a very small minority of people that benefit greatly from our disparity.
Well, yeah, the military-industrial complex, they won't have the money to go out and fight wars anymore. They won't be sending our children over to kill each other, you know? And the government, hey, if the government has to eat, here's another one for you guys. How many of you have had dinner for an entire week and all the thing that showed up on that plate was a piece of bread with butter on it and some Kool-Aid? How many of y'all out there have actually experienced that for an entire week?
Right here.
There you go. And you know what? When we had our bread and butter, we still said our grace at the table. We were thankful for what we did have.
You did go straight.
Now, you know, I want to see the doggone politicians out there when they have their big fancy dinners. I want them to, I want to be the servant that comes up there and brings them, lays them down a piece of bread and butter and a glass of Kool-Aid and tells them, you know, enjoy your meal, you know, because then they can see what the real people live like.
Yeah, I remember that week. I remember there was 2 days that week we didn't even get Kool-Aid. We got water.
Well, you know, there's people out there that know what suffering is because they've lived it, you know, and some people are really angry about it, you know. It's like the whole deal about, you know, if there was a God, which they deny, to blame God for everything that mankind does. Well, if God was so loving, why would he allow babies to die of starvation? By God, if it did sit there, if you got 9 billion people on the planet and there's a baby dying of starvation, somebody isn't getting off the couch.
Exactly.
It ain't God that did it. It's mankind. If there's free will out there, if you really have a choice of what you want to do with your life, you got a choice whether or not you can sit there and eat your caviar while the baby on the other side of the planet dies of starvation.
Yep.
That's common sense. You know, so sit around and blame the magical man in the sky that you don't believe in anyway?
So you got more food than you can eat, so you don't waste your money and buy food you don't need. You give it to some organization, feed the hungry children of the world. And you know, in the back of your mind, that they're not going to use your money to feed the hungry children of the world. They're just going to put it in their pockets. But you feel better because you did something. You didn't do a daggone thing. You don't give organizations money to feed the hungry children of the world that they're not doing it. They're putting it in their pockets.
Yeah, get up and walk it over to them.
Get together with other people that like you, that really want to help, and get the food to the children.
Raymond, you aren't feeding the hungry children of the world by funding corporations, but their hungers are not for food. Their hunger for manipulation, for unearned wealth. It's almost like a type of psychological attack on people. We'll take something that you can't really spare because you are a good person and you will make do so other people have enough. But we're sitting there laughing our backsides off you because really we're just putting it in a pocket. We don't need it.
Exactly, Steve.
Well, like I say out there, people got to practice what they preach on a daily basis. If you want this world to be a better place, you got to lead by example. And whenever you look out there and your governments are sitting out there right in front of your face telling you how racist the other side is or how this, that, they're sitting there trying to tell you how bad the other side is when in reality you follow their track record back and their track record stinks because they're like the pot calling the kettle black. And it's the same people all the time getting put in the office. the same groups of individuals, two different big families or whatever, I don't know, same people getting in office, the same controversies from 1900s all the way up to modern day present time. The same election rhetoric, the same fraud, the same taxation with extra to boot, the same people sending your children into wars, the same people telling you that we want to save the children, we want to save the planet, are doing the same doggone thing that they're telling you not to do. By God, if you took a bomb and lit it off in your neighborhood, you'd have the police and the military down on you so fast it wouldn't make your head spin. But it's okay for them to go over and drop it on somebody else's neighborhood under the guise of the so-called war on terror. You know, you can bomb babies, mamas, and daddies out of existence, and now you got orphans over there and refugees and people sick and dying because of lack of infrastructure. That's okay. That's collateral damage. You know? You can go and steal another nation's resources, and you can have buddies around the world, allies, who will help you do it. Under the same doggone guise of peace and bringing unity to the world. Their method of bringing unity to the world stinks because their method requires that a large portion of the population be quailed off or killed off or whatever you want to call it. It's ridiculous. And it gets more ridiculous on a daily basis when you have to listen to the average Joe repeat propaganda that just come through their ear via the squawk box or whatever. If you can't think for yourself, if you're going to come out and you're going to preach the so-called laws of physics of the universities, if you're going to go out there and preach the corporate laws and say you could do this but you can't do that, you're not free. You never been free. You're stuck up in a box and you're taking it out on everybody else, and I'm just another mouse in the maze. Get off my back. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Shazuz, they either come to your door to collect money to drop bombs on other people, or they come to your door with guns to collect that money to drop on other people.
Yeah. So well,
wait a minute. After they drop the bombs and kill all these people are scared. Then they turn around and take more money from you so they can bring them over here as refugees and give them free medical aid, free housing, free this, free that, and they haven't done a daggone thing but suffer through the tyranny of us.
Yeah, but see, listen to this, Raymond. Even the other ones over there coming over to get freebies, you can't blame them for wanting to come here and get freebies. You can't blame them. They're being used.
Wait, that's exactly my point. You can't blame them for wanting to come here. Because when they get here, they not only get the freebies, but they get to vote. And vote in the people that bombed them in the daggone first place. And of the people that are actually working and paying taxes and supporting the bombing and supporting these refugees, they're not voting.
They're being used. Just like we're being used. We're all being played like banjos, you know, pitted against one another.
Look. The reason the country is the way it is because the people that vote for a living outnumber the people that work for a living, that pay taxes, that vote.
Well, my deal on people who don't trust the voting system, if you don't trust the voting system, then it's up to you to get out there and ensure that you walk that vote directly to the box and make sure that you keep an eye on the counter. It's as simple as that. If you don't trust the system that you're supposed to have to choose your elected representation, that's all you got. If you we're a representative republic here in the United States of America, and if we don't hold our representation to accountable, and if we think we got a vote and it doesn't really count, and they're just putting whoever they want in office, it's up to we the people to shake said tyrannical government's foundation to the core and set them straight. You know? That's the whole deal. But as long as...
I've seen a narrative that's running through the internet, social media, TV, radio, all of this sort of stuff over the last decade, really, where people want me to be apologetic for the colour of my skin.
Yeah.
They call it white privilege. They call it this, call it that. And people, a few people have said to me, are you not ashamed to be white?
I said, well,
not really, because I didn't have a choice. It wasn't something I chose to be. I was born with the amount of melanin I have in my skin. And the only differentiation between myself and who knows how many different races are on the planet.
Yeah, and I can't even call myself true white, because I've got French, Canadian, and Cherokee, and who knows what else in me, you know? And so,
but I'm not ever going to apologize for me being me to anybody. And they find that offensive.
Well, you know something, Steve? You know your heart, all right? You know you're not a racist. You know what you are and what you aren't. You know the truth about Steve. And I do, too. I know the truth about myself. And so does Thomas and Raymond, you know. And so I'm not going to feel sorry about who I am. If I do something wrong, I'll have remorse, and I'll try to rectify it and make things right. You know, that's just the kind of person I am, the way I was raised in my upbringing. But
we're kind of all prone to a wobbly lip from time to time, and we make mistakes, and we have successes. But it's how we deal with each other, with those mistakes and successes, that makes the quality of the society that we live in.
Let me tell you something. I know who I am. I know what race I am. And I'm daggone proud that I am my race. I am a Heinz 57 American. I have four different cotton picking breeds in me than most people have hairs on their head. I am a Heinz 57, and I am proud of it.
Well, Raymond, a guy in Texas, told me that he was pure Anglo-Saxon. So Angles and Saxons are a mixed breed anyway.
Yeah.
That's why they've got two names. It's indicative of two different
pure Anglo-Saxon, right, pure. He's pure because they're two different breeds, and each one of those breeds are a conglomerate of all kinds of people. I mean, come on, man.
Well, the whole thing is, look, we got to get past all the stupidity, the divide and conquer. We got to move on to something productive. We ain't got time for knuckleheads. So, you know, as much as I hate to say it, I may just start bleeping hateful people off of my doggone channels, YouTube, Facebook, or whatever. I just might just start deleting them.
Weed
them out.
Why not? I mean, these people?
Every single person that puts a hateful comment on any of your social media sites, just put underneath it, thank you for your participation.
That's brilliant. I'm going to use it.
Do it.
Thank you for your comment.
Keep an eye out. I'm going to use it.
Don't get drawn into the big argument about it. No. Thank you for getting involved in the conversation.
Good. See, that's perfect. That is perfect. I mean, after all, how can you have good without bad?
That's why, unless they're being filthy language and being totally disrespectful, I don't censor comments, because I don't mind opposing views. I encourage opposing views, because that's how you get trouble solved. You know, I might be working on a project.
Accept them and thank them for their help, for their participation.
Yeah, well,
don't get upset about it.
I like opposing views, because if I'm working on a project, they might see something that I don't see, and it would actually be that piece of the puzzle that makes things get done faster, you know. But if you just come right on out and you're just being flat out rude and telling somebody how stupid they are because you don't agree with them, you're just part of the problem. You're not making this world a better place. And there's some folks that run around and run amok, and that's funny to them, you know. It's their sense of enjoyment to see how far they can get under people's skin. And, you know, I ain't got no time for that stuff. We got a lot of brilliant conversations that have occurred on these shows. We got some goofy ones that happened and some that didn't turn out so well. But regardless, we continued to put information on the table that would give people an opportunity to take that information and run with it. You know, all these little anomalies that I show, these little puzzle pieces that I keep showing everybody, and things that how electricity functions. I don't need to sit here and argue with you over high-tech terminology and try to explain to everybody the quantum physics of the world, because not everybody's got the time to learn quantum physics of the world.
I sure don't.
But people do have the time and they do have a need to figure out ways to get fresh water, to figure out ways to keep warm in the winter and cool in the summer. These needs are need to be all over the world, you know, and we're sitting here being taxed into oblivion here in the United States, and people hate our guts. I don't know why they should. Some of them should probably feel sorry for us. Some of them should be probably upset at the government, just like we are. That, you know, if we got to, they, if anything at all, they should be telling us, you guys need to get your government's act under control, because they're running amok under your name, and that's the bad part, you know.
Yeah, and that's why I don't like to pay taxes to this, because in my 44 years of life, it's been incredibly rare when anybody that's kind of paid from my from the various methods of taxation and funding has actually done really anything that's in the public interest.
Yeah, what have they done right? Go back and find a list of what they have done right. That's it.
Yeah, I can personally think of a lot of things our government has done right. But at the same time, for every time they've done something right, they've done 10 things wrong. That's the problem. Yep.
But Raymond, were the things that they did right just trying to kind of maintain some sort of equilibrium to get people to accept all the other stuff that they did?
A perfect example, and I don't know if it's all that perfect, but an example of what I just said was George Wallace in Georgia, the governor of Georgia. They found out he was stealing money from the city, embezzling money from the state, and they tried to accuse him of embezzling something like $3 or $4 or $5 million, and blah, blah, blah. And the man stood up on public nationwide television, not Georgia television, nationwide, and admitted, yes, I've taken money from the state. But for every dollar I've taken from the state, I have done $1 million worth of good for the state. And guess what? People reelected him because he was honest. He was a crook. He took money. But he took the money and used their money for them.
Well, one of the keys about that whole deal is if it would have been somebody out there in the citizenry that money was getting stolen from, they wouldn't have jumped to the gun as fast as they would when you take it from the state.
There you go.
But look, we got a lot of interesting things, really awesome things that we're working on. And the Pop Boat Contest, we're going to try to revive that. And we're going to try to get hopefully get some people to get involved this time around. Last time would have been a good go. It didn't go as well as we'd hoped. Didn't not even get one single entry in the deal, and so it just kind of, you know, blot out. But now we're actually going to build some full-size versions of that toy to prove some basic science and some concept, just to show people out there that it can be done. You know, and that's our way of putting up or shutting up. See, the thing is, if you're out there putting videos out, showing people things to help them out and giving them ideas and stirring the pot of positivity, then you are doing something. You know, if you're out there just trolling around and cursing people out, and you're not even trying to make no attempt to try to help educate one another, or, you know, open up a dialogue, a positive dialogue to work things out, we know our government's corrupt. We got to fix it. We know our world's in jeopardy. We've got to save it. We've got to get out there, and we got to find people who are in that area that can get resources to them. And if need be, if they don't have the funding, we need to figure out a way to hand deliver it to them. We got these capabilities. We can get on a jet airplane and fly to foreign nations. You got to get the right passports and the right inoculations before you can go in certain areas. But it's still not beyond the realms of possibility. If our militaries can amass thousands and thousands of tons worth of materials and medical equipment and war machines over to different nations to completely disrupt destruction, complete destruction, and disrupt their society to, in order to supposedly get the bad guy. Imagine if we took that kind of force and actually hand-delivered some food to some people. If there were pirates out there that were intending on stealing that food, or corrupt governments that were intending on stealing that food before it got to the people, then we'd go there and we'd stand there while they ate the food.
Well, Chaziz, I was thinking of a cluster bomb. Why not replace the explosives with a cluster bomb with cheese sandwiches?
Well, heck yeah! Oh,
man, that is cool. I love that, Steve.
You know, something.
Yeah, try making some cluster bombs of seeds.
There you go.
Spray seeds all over the place too. Get stuff growing, man.
Well, yeah. Heck yeah! Take some of them doggone crop dusters out there and just start bombarding them with tomatoes and every other kind of fruit and vegetable. Just like plant it up, man.
Really, Tom? I hope Monsanto are not listening.
Yeah.
Because that's where it goes to. I mean, somebody comes up with a good idea, or just some sort of alternative. Instead of blowing people up, you know, send them the stuff they need so they don't need to go somewhere else. And they're not objectionate to other people's way of life, because their way of life is being enhanced by your actions. Now, you can't automatically expect gratitude from it, because there are just weird, twisted people in this world that are angry and nothing will ever make them happy. But I can promise you this, some of the places I've been in the world, I've said to them, well, maybe I can get you a cheap second-hand laptop when I get back, if you need it. Because I'm not rich. I'm not rich by any stretch of the imagination. But they said, no, what we need is we need food. What use is a laptop to me when we got no electricity?
Yeah.
You know, we got no internet, we got no electricity. We need food, we need clean drinking water, we need clothes for our kids.
Steve,
we need shoes up on their feet.
Steve, you told me a story one time about a kid that built his own little FM radio station. Remember that story?
I think he was actually given a scholarship to a US university in the end.
Well, see, what's brilliant about that story, that's just one tiny example. There's some really wonderful minds over there that are just, you know, they say a mind is a terrible thing to waste, but yet they do it on a regular basis. If we were smart, we'd want to try to elevate those people up to where they did have electricity, where they did have the luxuries of everything everybody else has got out here, you know? And
well, there's the other side to that as well, Shaziz, that a waste is a terrible thing to mind.
Yeah?
There you go. Oh, God.
Well, all I'm saying is that we got the capabilities, we've got the resources, we've got the world, and it's our choice. It's not the guy in the sky that you guys keep complaining about, you don't even believe in. If he was the one, if he's so loving, why would he do it? And take that out of the picture for a second. Think about what you got standing before you. You got all this stuff out here. You could actually help people out. Just the companies that waste on a tonnage basis, all kinds of materials, all kinds of resources go by the wayside on a regular basis in, you know, big countries. And that there's people. If you watch, if you look hard enough, you'll find people out there who literally. Swarms of people will go up into old dumps and they will be scavenging for anything salvageable that they can make a few dollars on or feed their family for the day. There are people that are literally digging in the dumps to get what they can to survive.
And they talk to us about recycling.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, man. You got it cool.
Well,
yeah.
You know, if the folks... if the folks have to go through that, you know, that's a shame. They shouldn't have to dig in the trash for their meal. They shouldn't have to dig in the trash for recycled clothes or plastics. We should be doing this right out of the gate. There should be no waste.
Well, it's interesting that in Europe, under European legislation, when a white good like a fridge or a freezer or a washing machine is returned to the recycling centre, you can't go up to them and say, I had an idea that I could use this type of motor or that piece of wiring or that circuit board to recycle it into something useful. There's actually laws against you taking that.
Exactly. That's the second day of laws here in the United States.
They strip down all the components from it and resell it.
Well, yeah. Recycling, it doesn't bother me a bit when somebody goes out and gets an old appliance and you know, takes it apart and does a used appliance repair service, because that's less energy that has to be made in order to make a new one for somebody, you know? If we had that kind of mentality... Huh?
If you don't have consumption, then people can't make large profits selling this stuff that we don't need, that doesn't work very well. It's going to break within 12 months.
Well, if that's the way they feel about it, and that's their true agenda, then what in tarnation are they sitting there? Why are we sitting there allowing them to be hypocrites and mouth off about how we got to reduce our carbon footprints? You know, big companies agreeing to pay carbon tax. If I was a major company and I had some serious money and the knowledge that it was all bogus science to begin with, I'd take every doggone attorney I had and I'd put them full force against the system and I'd say, look, I ain't paying carbon tax because it's bogus. And I'd fight it.
I'm in Asia. You guys are in the US. I mean, we've had people from all over the world on this radio show. And if the Pope is so interested in reducing his carbon footprint, why can't he use Skype?
Yeah, why can't he just, like, instead of getting on a corporate jet and flying over here and then riding in limousines and having armed protectors everywhere he goes and all the police involved, a lot of the machinery to get everything and so he'll be safe and all that? He's got a huge carbon footprint before the whole deal's over. He could have just got on Skype, like Steve said, did a video conference with everybody and transmitted out worldwide and resolved the same issue. You see what I'm saying?
I've got a question for you. Why would these corporations fight something like a carbon tax that holds small companies from growing and being able to compete with them when they can just write it all off on their other taxes when they get done?
Well, that's...
We have seen pharmaceutical companies that have gotten fined millions of dollars for harming people and hurting people, and then they turn around and just write that fine off on their taxes. So basically, they never paid the fine in the first place.
Well, exactly. then things need to be put into place that where if you get paid a fine, it's not a tax deductible deal. It's straight up. It's coming out of your pocket.
Exactly. And until if your vote isn't working, there's another vote you can use. If your paper ballot or your lever switch vote's not working, start voting with your money. Yep. Start using those same tax loopholes and stop paying the government any money at all that you can get out of using their loopholes, so they'll have to close it up. If the whole country is using all those tax loopholes, they'll have to shut them down. The only reason they're leaving them open is because only their buddies are using them right now.
And in reality, if the government wasn't afraid of you, they wouldn't be spying on you, and they wouldn't be spending all kinds of money to build all kinds of private armies to fight against you.
Buying billions of bullets.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, you don't have to go into a violent revolution to make things different in your communities. What you got to do is start talking to your doggone neighbors and say, look, I need you to humor me for one day. We're going to sit down and watch the news together, and I want to show you something very interesting that we should be concerned about. And you sit there and flip from channel to channel to all the different news medias and listen to the things that are repeated on one side and repeated on the other. Listen how they pit one another against each other and pay attention. If you could actually get your neighbors to sit down and do this with you and actually look up in the sky once in a while and question what they're seeing, you know, walk around their environments, check the health of the trees, check the health of their, you know, start matching things up, putting two and two together, that kind of deal. If you could actually network with your local communities and get your people involved and then go up there and question, is my vote really making it from point A to point B, or is every time I pull that lever, do I get the candidate on the other side that I didn't vote for? You gotta do it.
Like, she says, I've never actually seen this voting system, but is that like a lever with a one-armed bandit, you know, where you kind of pull the lever, and then you get three reels that spin, and you might get the jackpot if you're really lucky?
Well, I kind of agree with that example there. It's almost like playing Russian roulette, you know. You pull the trigger for your vote, and you may or may not get it. And it may not be the one you want.
Or if you get the one you want, it might still go off on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the reality of what we've been talking about for all the years we've been doing these broadcasts is the same thing. It's us, folks. We're the ones that's got to fix this, because they're obviously not going to do it. If there really is a plan to kill us off, they're doing it slowly, so you ain't going to get mad and jump up right out of the gate. Because, you know, they know everybody here in the United States still has the power to fight back if things get bad, and they don't want to go through that, you know?
That's why they're trying to take your guns away from us.
They want to disarm you. They want to pit you against each other. So as long as you're fighting amongst each other, and as long as you're disarmed or docile from whatever chemistry they're putting in your food and water... You know,
well, that's the thing, is your your firearms that you just said they're trying to disarm you from is not the most dangerous thing you have.
No.
They're already disarming you by doing what they're doing to your children in school. Because the most dangerous thing they possibly have against tyrants is their intelligence.
Yeah.
Their critical thinking, their ability to think and decide and make choices and whatnot.
It's called dumbing them down.
Yep.
They're propaganda.
Well, the problem that is why they're so against homeschooling, because at home schools, kids generally are taught critical thinking.
Yep. They got to figure out a lot of the stuff on their own. And when you learn how to figure things out, it's not that hard to put two and two together whenever you see something that's not right. You don't just accept it. You know?
Well, when you do figure things out, you tend to get a scholarship from a U.S. university. Mm-hmm. So they've got plausible deniability of the fact that, well... If this guy could do that without us, where does that put us?
Right.
Some kinds, like a corner of third world Africa, can build an FM radio station, which does everything to warnings from local bandits to weather reports for farmers. I mean, it's a massive thing.
Well, you know, we got the capabilities. Maybe we can't control nature to the extent that we could tell you exactly down to the split second when it's going to start raining or not. You know, maybe our science isn't exactly there yet. But what we do have the capabilities of is building some really incredible advanced warning systems that would allow you to know that, hey, it's hitting about a town up ahead of you and it's coming your way. And even having your local creek set up to where if there was a flash flood, you'd know a quarter mile ahead of time to you know, head for high ground. You know, all these little ideas put together with everybody. There's so many people out there that have ideas that just they get a brilliant idea, and then nobody really pays attention to them, and then the idea goes by the wayside, and then later on somebody else might have the same idea and the same result, same time over and over again. But these people in these third world countries, they've had to survive, so they've had to figure out ways to survive. That's the way society makes improvements. You know, if you're tired of carrying a bucket of water from the well all the way up to the house, you do like they did back in the History of the World Part 1. You put plumbing in, you know, and pipe the water into your house.
Well, if you want government...
You learn what to make the pipe out of. I mean, after all, that's part of Rome's problem. They put in plumbing, but they used lead pipe. So evidently, I mean, obviously...
Well, not every idea is a brilliant one, Raymond.
Exactly. You got to try, but they learned. A lot of people died, but they learned.
What was you about to say, Steve?
If you really want government funding on a project, then try the Texifly reintroduction breeding program. And I'm sure that you get quite a lot of money for it.
Yeah, mate.
But if you wanted to perhaps... find a way for people to collect water from their environment, whether it be from the sky, ground, wherever it comes from, to provide yourself with a safe, clean drinking water supply, you can guarantee someone's coming knocking on your door.
Stephen Gibbons put a comment in there. I'm pretty sure we already addressed it, but he said it is better to recycle things that are built to fail within a year or two, or to make things from the most suitable hard wearing materials that would last generations, and then recycle them when they are replaced by more efficient things. You know,
well, can I speak to that, Shazis?
Yeah, go ahead.
An Aga oven. It's like the old fashioned wood stove range. Now, if we can get hydrogen burners working inside there, because a lot of them were retrofitted for gas instead of wood. Now, if we can burn hydrogen in them to produce heat, you've got a stovetop, you've got a heating system for a cabin, as well as being able to do multiple types of food production. And they are Victorian in certain circumstances. The rich and trendy types in England, when they built by themselves an old farmhouse because they're sick of living in the city, they're always looking for these Arga ovens. They're cast iron. I mean, some of these things are over 150 years old and they're still working. And it wouldn't take that much effort to retrofit it with an alternative fuel system.
No. And the thing about it is, you know, most houses that are concerned about it have carbon monoxide detectors in their house because they're burning natural gas or something like that. You don't have that problem with hydrogen.
Yes, you just got the condensation.
Yeah, the condensation. And heck, man, you just build in a dehumidifier with the condensation portion, and now you got fresh water.
Well, you have your recyclable fuel supply.
Yeah. So, you know, look, the answers are there, people. They've been there for so long. And, you know, guys like us that come out here and we talk about this stuff, and we get wise guys that like to say, well, you all talking, there's no solution and this and that. The solution is we put the idea on the table, run with it, doggone it. You know, if I tell you that by putting some plastic over your windows during the wintertime will actually cut your heat bill down because it'll, you know, keep the cold air out, or, you know, if you can't afford double or triple pane glass to put in there, it's at least a simple solution that you could actually, you know, save on your energy bill, and you don't do it, was it my fault because the idea wasn't the greatest in the world, or is it your fault because you chose not to try it?
Hey, wait a minute. Old man, when I was a young man, an older man, once told me, son, if I tell you a rooster can pull a freight train, don't ask any questions, just hook his butt up to it.
Try it out. Try it before you deny it.
No joke.
That's the whole thing. We have put solutions on the table over and over and over again. And we've done it we've talked to so many people through this network. We've met friends, we've met haters, and so on and so forth. We've done it. We're still doing it. We're going to continue to do it as long as we're able to do so.
Hey, I think a lot of these people keep screaming, you guys ain't doing nothing, you're not putting any solutions out there and whatnot. They're actually projecting.
Because they ain't got no videos to show what they've done?
Yeah, I was going to say, how often have you seen somebody going off on someone else on YouTube, and then you go and look after they've critiqued the crap out of the person that the video that you just got done watching, and you find out that that person doesn't have a single video?
Yeah.
Right. Many times they don't even have liked videos or playlists or anything. They've got nothing. It's just, you know, they made an account so they could come and bash on people.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say they call it. Any
call it a keyboard warrior.
No, they don't have nothing. They've got something. They just have hate and laziness.
Oh yeah, if you go look around, you'll find out that they've been probably doing the same thing to everybody else. But you know, they don't have any production of their own. Not even the production of collection. It's just, you know, just a bunch of nonsense. They're the only energy they're generating is hot air.
You cannot have up without a down. And you can't have down without up.
Well, at this stage in the game, we ain't got time for all the downers out there. So I like Steve's plan about putting on there, thanks for your contribution and moving on. You know, that's what we all need to do.
For your contribution.
Yeah, Paul's not doing something that would be considered illegal, you know, like talking about doing something to hurt other people, or, you know, doing... you know, yelling and cyberbullying and whatnot, or cursing, or, you know, basically breaking any of your own personal rules too that you're not going to put up with it in your house. I would say just leave it there then, you know.
Yeah.
Move on.
That's the plan. That's a brilliant plan. Thanks for that, Steve.
Well, you can always put in there, no thanks. And just leave it at that. Because they will go off on a massive, great big... They'll sit there for an hour trying to think of the perfect three-line phrase to put in that's going to be a soundbite for somebody else to pick it up and say, oh, yeah. But if you say, thank you for your contribution, or no thanks. Well, they're going to spend hours of their time going off on one. Well, sure, off actually doing something constructive.
Yeah.
Well, you know what you do? If they put in a big long rant where they're going off on you about it, just put a comment that says TLDR, make a video so I can watch it.
Yeah. That's the thing.
I mean, a new condo now, Shaziz, and within 3 days of moving in, I had all my stuff unpacked, and I started up with the artificial light systems again.
Cool.
Because a lot of the work that I did before, I did document some of it, but I lost the hard drive that everything was on. So I'm kind of starting from scratch again. But, you know, I need to start showing people how this works rather than just telling them it works.
Yeah, and now I'm real excited about this pop boat contest deal because I've been wanting to do this for a long time. I got to get my coil system made up on it. I got all kinds of, like Raymond was saying, he was building it in his mind while he was thinking about the whole deal. He's already got his perfected down the way he's wanting, so do I. And so, you know.
What sort of mechanical torque do you think you could apply with a large implementation of the pop-pop boat?
Oh, man, I think you can get some incredible torque out of this deal. What I was talking about, if you could visualize this, if you had, let's say you had a 2-inch in diameter stainless tube, and inside that 2-inch in diameter stainless tube, you had a bunch of really small tubes, like little 1/8-inch tubes or something like that. Almost like looking like a honeycomb, and then you took and coiled this thing up. You would have multiple turns in there, and so you would have how many ever times that deal with that pressure to build up inside there. You see where what I'm saying here? And
yeah.
So if what Raymond did had as much torque as it had, you can imagine how much more you would have with multi-ported tube system that was sending that power out the back. So, you know, it's worth a try. You know, do it on a cheap level, maybe with some copper tubing and smaller copper tubing at first, and then if the prototype works out the way it's supposed to, then, you know, maybe somebody out there would be willing to invest in putting it into manufacturing on real time with like stainless steel and the best quality materials. And I was thinking about this the other day. Somebody had mentioned about how it would actually cause the water in the pond to get hot, but in reality, it won't. Because
it's still hot because the water that comes out of the tube from the pop engine is cold.
Yeah, because when it's heated on that one side, the bottom tubes are actually underwater, and so you get a condensation that actually helps to refeed the pressure inside there while it's pushing pressure out the back. So it's a brilliant design, and if it could actually be done like we're saying, and I know it can. I built one myself, a small version, and Raymond's did his video on there. We know that we can get some serious power out of just a couple windings by themselves. Imagine if it was engineered properly. You would literally have a solid-state boat motor that could run off of hydrogen, where you could, you wouldn't even have to, it's not like running an internal combustion engine where you need a whole lot of fuel on demand. All you're doing is wanting to be able to put a flame out there. And so if you can build up enough hydrogen to burn that, you're not even putting any toxic gas into the deal. And you're not going to have to worry about, you know, putting any crud into the water. You're not going to have to worry about the temperature, because by the time that exhaust gets out the back, it's already cold again. It's back to water again.
Here's the thing. Properly built, not one BTU, one BTU of energy used to operate the engine ever enters the lake.
That's right.
Not one.
And all you're doing is building a heat engine that has a whole lot of pressure behind it. And
the beautiful part about a heat engine is that most people don't really understand. A heat engine is only as efficient as you are about getting the heat out of the engine. You put all the heat you want into a heat engine, it will not run if you don't get the heat out. You've got to get the heat out as fast as you put it in, then it becomes 100% efficient. So the best way to do a heat engine is to build it to where you can get the heat out faster than you can put it in. Then it will operate with 100% efficiency.
Well, I believe that it can be done enough that I'm going to build a prototype, even if it costs me a bunch of money. I'm going to get one really good prototype. I'm going to do a video on it, and that's going to be my contribution to the contest. And And hopefully it sparks off the interest where everybody else wants to get involved too, because, you know, somebody on the other side, like Raymond's design is slightly different than mine, or, you know, maybe even totally different than mine.
But
now we got two separate researches going on at the same exact time on the same project, that one of the two or even both are going to come out with ideas that can be put together to make a even better one out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I want to get to a full high-tech version to where I can take some argon gas in a plasma chamber and get my heat that way, where I can literally adjust it up and down by the input of the power that I'm putting into that plasma, and basically make a high-tech version of a boat motor that's just transferring heat in order to move you around.
There you go.
So, you know, hey, it's like this. The Star Wars and the Star Trek, all those were ideas that people had in the science fiction world, that some parts of that end up becoming science fact. And it started off with a dream, and that's how you get things done, you know? But you got to get out there and you got to act on that dream, otherwise it's just a dream. And if it's a lost idea, then that's a shame for humanity, because right now, in this day and age, humanity needs every good idea that they can get. We need people out there working with each other and building and creating, you know. Build 10,000 different pop-pop boats. Find out which one has the best torque, which one has the best heat transfer, and take all those good ideas that you've learned from that and combine them into one that you now could buy a solid-state boat motor, and you could ship it over to a third-world country where they're not dumping gasoline and oil down into their waterways and polluting the fish that they're trying to feed themselves with. You see what I mean?
Amen.
Why not dig a 50-foot trench that's 2 foot deep, line it in plastic, and fill it with water and have pop, pop, pop races?
That would be great.
Yes, it would.
That would be awesome. Man, you know, hey, I'd even supply the land for that deal.
You know, actually, you don't have to spend the money to dig the trench. You could actually just take a 2x10 or 2x12 and put them together, and make sure they're level, and line the inside with plastic, fill that with water.
Raymond,
I mean, a pop-up boat could float in 2 inches of water.
Raymond, I got a bobcat. I can dig the trench.
Yeah, but it's going to cost money for you.
Well, hey, it'd be worth it.
It's a good idea. It's a good idea.
It'd be worth it. You know, we put a dual track on there where two or four boats can race at a time. You know. Give everybody equal time to bring it up to operating temperature and then let them rip.
There you go.
You know, and see, this is another thing. Those events, if you got together and put events together like this, those things could benefit people because, you know, hey, somebody might want to throw a snack bar up at this event or something. You know, they could earn a living selling people some hot dogs or something like that, you know. You know, and it's everybody bringing their own things together. Like if you go down to your local swap meet, people got all kinds of stuff. You can buy stuff. They got their own vendors, and it's not one big company that's doing it. It's all the people combined that's making this picnic.
I heard
that. Suggesting that, Shazid, is because people constantly complain nowadays about the lack of community.
Well, and this is a way to get them together. You know, bring them together on something that's not just work. It's fun, you know, and it's educational.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Look at the soapbox races they used to do years ago.
The best thing that I've ever loved to do, and I love those too, those, you know, soapbox races were cool, you know, built their own homemade go-karts. But the best thing that I ever liked about going to a community fair was to go around and find all those guys that's got their really cool scientific-like toys and they're showing people really neat things, you know, like centrifugal force or whatever, you know. And to ask them questions, what, you know, we'll give you that idea or whatever, you know. They actually build up them and they sell them and they're hoping to one day be able to market them on a large scale. But that is the best part of the whole doggone deal. Go around and finding creative people that's done all kinds of artworks and crafts and stuff. You would be surprised at how artistic that a lot of the people out there that you see on a regular basis, you know, are, you know, that they got talents. And to bring that talent into a place to where they can actually benefit themselves and share their talent with people, you know, in the right place. Thomas is an artist. I've seen some of his work. If you hadn't seen his work, he wants to share it with you. You should see the work that he does. He's meticulous at the way he does it. He don't just slap something together. It really looks like it was made in a factory.
You know, when you first meet Thomas and talk to him, you think he's a borderline genius. But when you actually get to know him, he is a genius.
Well, and these are the kind of people. And shoot, man, Steve, he's not only a chef, but he knows how to make beer, man. So that just made the party even better. Got Thomas helping decorate the thing. Steven's cooking up some grub and some beer. And I'm over here making some mad science projects for everybody to mess with. And Raymond's got his deal going on. Man, I'll tell you what. That's what starts a party, man.
Well, I'll tell you what, Shaz, is if people can't paint and they can't draw and they're not very practical with building stuff, go and take a look at Thailand fruit carving. The only tools you need for it is a small knife and some fruit.
Oh yes, I've seen that. Oh, that is amazing.
We need to find a good organizer. We need to find somebody who's really good at organizing events and have them gather up all the brilliant minds from all these different research channels on YouTube, an alternative energy convention of epic proportions.
You know, wait a minute. We've got a really broad listening audience. I got a sneaky feeling that there's somebody out there that fits the scenario you're just talking about. We need that person to contact you.
Well, if you guys...
I don't know who you are, but you're out there, and you're listening to us, and you're hearing us, and you think, oh, well, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. I can do that. Well, don't just sit there and say, oh, yeah, I can do that. Do it. Please. We need your help. You're out there.
Yeah, if you're interested in organizing a big event and helping people to try to, you know... set up their little food stands or whatever like that. See, I can do a whole lot of different things as far as mechanical wise, but when it comes to trying to be a salesman and an organizer, yeah, I'm the wrong guy for that one.
I suck at it too. I really do. but you're out there. I don't know who you are.
All right, folks.
Out there, you're listening to us right now. We need your help. We're begging, please.
I want to address something else in there. You know, Barry's kind of upset about some things going on out here in the natural world out here, you know, with earthquakes and things going on like that. There's things happening in this world, and there's going to be people in need. We got to, you know, try to prepare ahead of time for all kinds of stuff and figure out ways that we're, you know, when these things do occur, we can help each other out. You know, worst case scenario, all heck breaks loose and the entire system collapses, it's going to be we, the people, left standing. You know, if we get that lucky that we survive World War III or whatever man decides to mess each other up with, or, you know, even nature itself. Nature's not happy. Nature will fight back. And when nature fights back, you're going to lose. You know, we got to take care of it.
This is my point about building your local community. Nobody will do it for you.
Yep.
But if you're at an event where somebody brings a bit of apple pie, somebody brings a few muffins, somebody brings some Kool-Aid, whatever, nobody puts their hand too deep in their own pocket, uses up their own resources, and everyone has enough. Now, once you've got these communities in place, when something bad does happen, then it's already there.
There's a brilliant story that I've mentioned on Knights of the Round Table at one point. It's called Stone Soup. If you've never read the story of Stone Soup, go out and read it just for giggles, you know. And what it basically is a guy that he looked in his cupboards, he didn't find anything, and so he decided to be brilliant and bring his community together for dinner. And so he puts this pan on the stove, you know, and puts some... water in there and throws a rock in there, just a big old stone, and he starts stirring it, you know, and one of his neighbors walks by and he says, what you doing there? He says, I'm making stone soup, would you like to try some? And the guy says, so sure, thank you. And he come over and And he didn't want to be rude or nothing, so he said, you know, oh, there's just something missing in this. Hold on, let me run over to my house. I'll bring something back. And so he came back with a little bit of salt and put it in there. Well, then the next person ended up coming by, and they turned around and said, they tried it, and they was like, well, you know, that's, you know, not bad, but, you know, I think it could be better with a little bit of this. So they went back, and they got some carrots, and it just kept on going until eventually, when it was around about summertime and everything was done, the man dips into the soup with the spoon and pulls out the stone and throws it over his shoulder, and they're like, what are you doing? He said, well, it's time to eat. We got food. Everybody, basically, as a community, built the perfect stew. You know, what I didn't have, they brought. Vice versa. That's pretty much what Raymond just said, you know. And, you know, this is what we got to do. If we want to build our networks and our communities, we've got to get together and build stone soup with each other, you know.
Yes, sir.
Bring your improvements.
You know, somebody out there that knows how to organize might say to themselves, well, what's in it for me? Well, duh, you're contributing to a great organization, a great party, where a lot of people are going to have a lot of fun, and you are going to be responsible for it.
Yeah.
That's what's in it for you. You are going to be responsible for putting this thing together where thousands of people are going to eventually come, because it's going to be an annual event. And thousands, tens of thousands of people are going to come and have a really good time. It's like Steve said about the soapbox derbies. I mean, you know, thousands of people from all over the world, even, not just the United States, came to soapbox derbies to just enjoy each other's company and have fun.
And the connections that could be made in there could be not only business, savvy connections, but friends as well.
Exactly.
You know, it's a no-lose situation. It's a win-win for everybody.
No-lose at all for anyone.
So what, you was about to say something, Steve. What was that?
Three potatoes, three carrots, salt, pepper, 1 liter of water, and a dash of cream is all you need to make soup for four.
Wow.
Oh, no, sorry, 2 liters of water.
Well, there you go, man. You even got a recipe out of that one.
I don't know if this is relative or not, but I'm going to say it anyway. My first wife, God bless her heart, that was one beautiful woman. But she was from California. And her family moved out to North Carolina, where I lived at that time, and actually Virginia. And I met her. We got married. And anyway, my mother gave me a bunch of seeds. A bunch of seeds. And one of the packs got busted open and got all over the front porch. And my wife got out there with a garden hose, washed the seeds off the porch. I'm making a short story long, but you know, we need to quit. Anyway, the seeds grew. And they grew up, and they were turnips. So I told the wife, I said, why don't you cook some greens here? And I picked some of them, you know. Well, what's greens? Is that grass? I said, no. I can't even remember how to explain them. Anyway, she cooked them, and the whole family loved them. You know, they loved it. And this thing went on and on for several years of me introducing her to new types of food that she had never known about. So it finally got to the point. One time, just for a lark, just for a joke, I walked in the house and I took one of these round, slick river rocks and I handed it to her. I said, fix this for dinner. She looked at me and said, how do you want it? Fried, baked, or boiled?
Huh. Well.
She trusted me that if I said, cook it, then it was edible. Because there were so many different things she didn't know about that she learned.
Raymond, do you grow sweet potatoes around where you are?
Oh, Lord, yes.
Okay. You ever tried the leaves like spinach?
Uh-huh.
I do steamed sweet potato leaves with shrimp and chili paste.
Oh, man, that sounds great. You know, people don't realize that just because of you eat a certain thing of the plant, they don't realize that there's other portions of the plant that are edible. For example, sweet corn. I used to grow sweet corn when I lived in North Carolina. Lots of it. And the thing is, we pick the corn. Well, once you pick the ear of corn off the stalk, then that's it. We cut the stalks down. I would cut the knots in the stalk out, give them to the kids, and the sections between knots, I would give to my horses. And the leaves I would give to the horses, because the stalk is full of sugar. And the kids would eat these things like candy. They didn't actually eat them. They chew them and suck the juice out of it and then spit the rest out.
That's where corn sugar comes from.
Exactly.
Corn oil as well.
Sugar corn. So why are we making alcohol from corn when we could eat the corn and cut the stalks down and press the sugar out and make alcohol from that? Come on. Why not?
Yeah, that's a good idea. But the point I'm trying to make is you hit the nail right on the head there, Raymond.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you have a community gathering and you're not really sure what to cook, you can forage.
Exactly.
Foraged food is not bad for you. It actually got to the point where so many people in England were kind of going back to nature and going to their local pathways and bridleways, which would have been like horse trails.
Right.
And foraging blackberries, raspberries, you know, the summer fruits, the winter nuts. Uh-huh. And the local councils went up and started spraying chemicals on it. And people said, but why? And they said, oh, well, we don't really like to encourage foraging. And they said, but why?
Yeah,
I mean, the Polish guys I used to live with in Ireland, they go out in the woods on a Sunday morning and they go for chanterelle mushrooms. And they'd spend, you know, have a lovely walk through the woods and they'd have a look around and they'd come back with a basket of mushrooms and they used to make mushroom soup.
Wow.
And that cost them literally nothing.
Yeah. Really? And had good luck doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's good exercise, it's healthy. I mean, there was a place called, what it was the 12 stations of the Christian cross,
right,
going up a big long hill. And when you got to the top, there was a massive great big crucifix that used to light up at Easter and Christmas every year. But it was on the side of pine woodlands.
What do you guys say we take a quick music break and add Barry into the call and come back and polish off the last half of the Knights of the Round Table?
Excellent idea.
All right. Somebody want to add Barry to the conversation? All right, everybody. Peace and love. Stay tuned. You're listening to Knights of the Round Table.
Lazy yellow moon coming up tonight, shining through the trees. Crickets are singing and lightning bugs are floating on the breeze, fading it red in. Across the field where the creek turns back by the old stump road, I'm gonna take you to a special place that nobody knows. Baby, get ready. Ooh, ooh. You and me go fishing in the dark, lying on our backs and counting the stars where the cool grass grows. Down by the river in the full moonlight, we'll be falling in love in the middle of the night, just moving slow. Almost over and the summer's come and the days are getting long. I waited all winter for the time to be right just to take you along. Baby, get ready. And it don't matter if we sit forever and the fish don't bite. We'll jump in a river and cool ourselves from the heat of the night. The river in the full moonlight will be falling in.
everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. A lot of brilliant discussions go on behind the scenes out there. There's all kinds of things going on in the world, environmentally and politically and mentally and emotionally. And it's up to us, to we the people, to get prepared for any such emergency and start figuring out ways to bring about solutions to the table. You know, that's what the table's here for. The table ain't here just to have a snack on, you know. It's here to give you an opportunity to step up to the mic and tell the world what you see happening, things that need to be addressed, and together we use all of our research and brilliance to do just that. We get things going. You know, it don't say we the people on the top of that document because, you know, somebody just wanted to stress we the people. It says it up there because you're the one responsible. We are. We're the ones responsible. We got to fix things. So, we've been joined by Barry, and we still got Steve and Thomas and Raymond in here. So, how you guys doing? Barry, you seem to want to talk about something.
I thought we were on the air there, Shiz. I didn't know we were on a break.
No, we were on a break.
No, I don't know if I could just repeat what I just said, but yeah, you know, of course, you know, I'm a big and avid supporter of the hemp plant, and of course, so that being implemented worldwide on our planet right now would really have a major effect in turning around things we see going on in our environment. And this is what I crusade about every day now. I take every chance and every opportunity I get in my life to share the knowledge about this planet and what it can do to turn things around on this planet. It is at a point now where, honestly, I feel that we are going to extinct life on this planet. And that is something I never thought I'd be able to say in my lifetime, but I can honestly say at this point, I honestly feel, unless we turn things around here in the very, very, very near future, our children aren't going to have food to eat. There isn't going to be life on this planet, guys. And that's a pretty scary thought, but you know what? It's a reality. It's the world we live in today, and we brought ourselves to this point. You know, Fukushima is absolutely driving me insane. On the 1st of June, all seven chiefs for all the First Nation bands on the north coast of British Columbia have called a big meeting at the Nishka Hall in Prince Rupert to discuss the detected levels of radiation now being found in Pacific salmon. The Fraser Valley band, I forget the name of the band, just tested their first runs of sockeye this year, and they have issued a warning to their members of their bands not to eat the sockeye they're catching out of the Fraser River, which is one of our main tributaries in British Columbia. It's one of the main rivers in British Columbia. There's three or four major rivers in British Columbia. Fraser is probably number one. The Skeet is number two, and the Columbia and everything else. But the fact that now that they are telling their band members to avoid eating the very sustenance that has supported their band for the last thousands of years. They have been living off the fish coming out of the ocean. To now even think that the possibility that you can't eat this stuff, that it is at a point now where it is not safe to consume. This is 5 years into what we see going on with Fukushima. What is the next 5 years going to bring? It's something we have to address now, because I don't believe we have enough 10 years as a species on this planet to address these issues. So, the hemp plant, guys, the tests, the results I just saw about, I mean, you're probably aware of the tests of what happens to radiated soil when they plant industrial hemp on radiated soil. Well, in 2 years, all radiation has disappeared from that soil. That is just one of the thousands of things that this plant can do for this world if we grab it by the short hairs right now and implement it worldwide. And that's what needs to be done. We need to stop deforesting. That can be done with the hemp plant. We've got to stop putting chemicals into our atmosphere, chemicals into our water. It can all be turned around. We've got to stop building houses that burn. That can be changed. We got to stop the pharmaceutical industry. That can be stopped. It all can be done. And of course, they're going to fight this to the death, because the last thing they want is anything that's good for the human race. And we know that because we're dealing with psychopaths. But we as a people, man, we got to look in the mirror every day and ask ourselves, what kind of legacy we're leaving for our children? What are our children going to experience in 10 or 15 years from now? I can't even vision it in my brain. I see what's going on now, and I go, wow. You know, every day I go to the store, and I see a little child, and I almost feel like crying. I almost brings tears to me, because I know what they're going to experience isn't anything what I've been able to experience in my 61 years on this planet. And that, guys, tears me to pieces. It really does. So I wish I could get Steve Danks in here right now and let you talk to this gentleman that's had a major impact on my life here in the last little while because it is crusading on this hemp plant, and how he describes it, how he explains to people how it really is the answer because of the genetics of the plant, how it is so tied to the human body, how it is so tied to the planet Earth, that it was meant to be on this planet and we've taken it away, and now we're seeing the effects of removing this from our environment. It could all be changed from bringing it back in wide-scale production of industrial hemp. We got to stop deforesting, man. We've got to stop cutting down trees. These are things that we have to do if we want to see this planet survive. If we don't, then we got to look ourselves in the mirror and say, well, you know, we knew about this. We knew, we saw the writing on the wall, but we didn't do anything about it. I don't want to be able to say that to my children. I am going to fight to the death and do everything I can to get the word out about what can save.
Well, I'll shut up. I think that I can safely say we all agree that there's definitely an urgency to we don't have a choice. We got to become better caretakers of our environment because things are really not working out so well as far as you know, how things, you can see it, your environment, you can see the color of people's eyes as they become sickened, and the way that they're, you know, the obesity rate here in the United States is, it's skyrocketing, everything from diabetes to, you know, just crazy diseases that weren't really that common back in the day when people were eating fairly healthy and such. You know, but we got what we need to make this to do the repairs, the necessary repairs. But what we do not have is time. You know,
as far as what Barry was saying about it, marijuana and the industrial hemp, the two main things that most people think about when they think of the hemp family affecting the environment. If you don't think that a single plant can affect the environment, then you need to go do a little research on the wolves in Yellowstone Park and how just reintroducing the wolves back into the environment literally affected an entire large river.
Right. Agreed. Absolutely. It's a necessity right now, guys. I mean, really, if we think about, like I said, 10 years down the road from now, we see just in the last 5 years the effects in the Pacific Ocean. We see an incredible acceleration of death of all species on the planet. This isn't bull. It's fact. I don't base anything on what I say by hearsay. I really try and research everything that I say and everything I discuss on the air, and I have looked into this for weeks and months of what's happening to our environment, what's happening to the plants and the animals on this planet, and we are wiping them out. Well, what kind of future do we have if we don't stand up right now? Nothing is more important in our lives. That new car, that TV, that it's all bull. It's all crap. It's all a distraction from keeping us away from being the caretakers that we have to be for the future of our children. I've enjoyed a great life on this world. I've enjoyed the abundance of nature. I've been out in the ocean. I've seen things that I wish I could share with you guys. And to think that my children aren't going to be able to share the same kind of experiences is just a travesty. But we can turn it around. But we have to come to collectively together as a people and mandate the changes, because if we leave it up to the government, it will never happen. Period.
Well, folks, we've been ringing the doggone alarm bell for a long time, trying to tell people that, you know, we saw things coming down the road that didn't look so good that we might want to just keep an eye on. And the things that he's talking about, you know, Fukushima and all the different disasters that they had out there, the BP oil spill, one of my biggest concerns was something that never was getting addressed, was that when they put thousands of gallons of Corexit into the ocean, that it was designed specifically to break down oil. You got to think, fish have oil in them, you know? And so how is that affecting the fish, and why was so much allowed to be dumped in there? And from what I understand, they had never stopped. They just kind of decreased how much they were using, you know? And all that does is mask the symptom. I think they would have been better off literally just to leave the oil alone and not pour stuff on it, you know? Sure, it would have been a heck of an ecological disaster on a small scale, but now we're talking about that stuff being swooped all the way around through the Gulf Stream and so on. just like the stuff leaking out.
The oil spill was only a disaster because of the scale of it. Before we were drilling for oil, oil was coming up out of the crust of the earth on its own. And that includes at the bottom of the ocean. And there are organisms that are literally adapted to consume that resource, because that's what life does. Is basically, if you come up with a food source that everything else can't eat, one of them will adapt in order to be able to consume that, because it's tired of competing to get the other food that it's used to eating, that the other life forms it is competing with are consuming.
Well, we need to get people out there proactive, and I'm not talking about, you know, getting out there picketing and stuff like that. Picketing doesn't do no good. It never has done any good. All it does is get the corporations more money by throwing you in jail and fines and so on and so forth. It makes you look like a fool. You want to vote, you want to really seriously get out there and make a difference, you got to hit them where it counts. You got to hit them in the doggone wallet. These mainstream medias out there, they're going to put whatever information is given to them. They don't care whether it's true, whether it's not. If it brings in ratings and customers such as advertisers, they're going to put it out there. And they'll put you out there making a fool out of yourself. And you should be the one, they should be the one you're protesting against. You should be standing on the lawn of the doggone news media saying, look, y'all been propagandizing us, you've been mocking us and ridiculing us all this time. When there's things that need to be addressed, you're not talking about them, you know? So what's this all about? Hey, somebody got a cell phone going? you see what I'm saying? You're protesting the wrong people. If you protest the guys with guns, you might get shot. If you protest the government, they're going to call the guys with guns in. They're going to either want to beat you up, throw you in jail, because you know they don't understand what the oath that they took was to protect your right to say what it is you're saying against your government. You know, that's the ironic nature of the whole doggone thing. You're feeding the same beast that's eating you alive. If you really want to protest them out there, get out there and protest them with your dollar. Get out there and protest them with your works. Go out there and plant some trees. Go out there and find some fish that aren't tainted and harbor them. Put them in a safe place and take care of them, so that if worst case scenario comes down, we're not losing all these species, you know. They did this in zoos for a while. When things started becoming extinct, they started putting them in zoos. And you know, that sounds terrible. You lock the animal up in a cage, but, you know, the alternative is that they're getting poisoned or dying off or, you know, whatever. We got to do something to clean up the mess that mankind has made. You know what I mean?
Well, because this, these biospheres they've got in the North and South Pole and dotted around all over the place, these seed banks, do we need to wait until such a point where the world's so polluted that we can't grow anything, so these people have control over nature?
Yeah, they're under this crazy illusion that they could wait till after World War III and then, you know, replant and repopulate the planet and that kind of stuff. When in reality, we ever make it to World War III, y'all just might as well hang your hat up and just give it up, because you know the bombs that they dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they did some terrible damage. I mean, I saw it. I sat there firsthand and seen the museums and all the things left over from that disaster, and read all the stories and did all the research on it. It was a terrible incident that happened to those people, but those were firecrackers compared to what they got now. And if they ever come about to decide that, you know, it's going to be mutual assured destruction, that's exactly what you're going to get. And I don't care how deep your bunker is and you think you're going to come back out. No, you better have a whole lot of something going on, because this earth is going to be scorched and you ain't going to get nothing. There ain't going to be nothing worthwhile up top. It's kind of like
The insanity of it, eh?
Yeah.
The insanity. Let's kill the planet, kill everybody on it, but we can't come back out. Enjoy it.
It's like that song, Metallica, King Nothing, you know, where you blow it all up and you're standing on the top of a trash heap and you're the last man standing. You're the king, man. Hey, I'm the king.
Like I was saying off off air there, you know, the die-off of sardines off the coast of Chile right now isn't being reported on mainstream, but it should be, because literally the last report I read, the estimate was as close, it could be up to 50,000 tons now have washed up on the beach of Chile of dead sardines. Well, if that doesn't wake people up, then nothing will, but we don't see this being exposed on mainstream where it should be right on the front page of every paper in the world, because we're seeing the very die-off of the bottom of the ocean. If we kill the ocean, we kill all life on the planet. What is more important right now than defending that guy?
Well, I'll tell you what, folks. Get your video cameras out when you're in an area where something like that's going on. Document the heck out of it. Pump the alternative media with it and stand out on the doggone lawn of the mainstream media and force them to show the world what's going on. You know, for some reason, governments seem to think that you don't need to know. You're not strong enough to know what's really happening around you. So they don't want to panic everybody out there. When in reality, right now is about the time you should be panicking, because, like Barry said, it's your children's future at stake. You know, I'm 50 years old, and when I'm gone, you know, I led a pretty productive life. I've had a lot of good things happen in my life. Had a lot of bad too, but either way, I had a chance. You know, our children ain't going to have the option of the good or bad that's coming down the line if we keep going on the way that we're going. We got to do something, and it has to be done now, not tomorrow. You know.
Yeah, I agree, Shizzes. I don't think we have another generation to correct the problems we see coming on the planet right now if we don't jump on this now. Literally, I mean, like, I'm not a fear-monger type of guy, but honestly, I feel if we don't jump on this in the very, very near future, like, right away, we are not going to have life on this planet. And that's a pretty scary thought, but we are doing it. I mean, it's there. The writing is on the wall, guys. And we have to, like you said, Shizzes, force mainstream media to expose this, to get people to understand that nothing right now is more important. Nothing is more important in their lives than protecting this planet.
Well, if they're sending,
if we get people on board, maybe we can get the changes we need. But if we don't, I believe we're doomed as a species on this planet right now.
If you believe they're spraying it in the sky, you see the checker patterns up there, then take videos and pictures and just keep pumping the mainstream media over and over and over again. Just drop the hammer on them, just like you would as if you're out there trying to protest the governor's office. With the exception is, now the mainstream media, who likes to demonize the police, to say the police are all racist, corrupt individuals, now they got to call the same police that they just got through demonizing. It may come a day when the police say, hold on a second, remember all that trash you talked about us? We'll be there. We got a dog to get out of a tree or something like that, you know? So, you know, hey, when the shoe's on the other foot, there's going to be a different story. You know, they don't care that you're going to go out and protest the government. It's good for ratings, you know, as long as you're out there trashing stuff. Don't trash stuff. Don't try to, you know, if you want to fix the world, you got to do something positive. Not go out there and burn down your own communities where then your doggone people ain't going to come back and put businesses in there, and you're not going to have a job.
The trick is to start in your own backyard, guys.
Yep.
Do everything you can to not support the system. I know everybody loves to go to Walmarts. Stop buying anything from Walmart. If you have to pay a few extra dollars, that's a very, very small investment when you talk about taking a piece out of the cog. Support local businesses. Do things that will not put tax money in the government's pocket. Defy the government on their illegal tax laws. Thousands of Canadians now are doing that. There's laws in America that are telling us that what the government is doing, taxing you, is totally illegal. Well, if everybody became educated on those laws and challenged the government on what they're doing, we will see change. But when people sit back and go about their lives and go to work and pay their taxes and think everything is going to be fine, until we can get over that mindset in people, we aren't going to see the changes we need.
Yeah.
It really starts at home, guys, of doing what you can. It's like I said off the air there, when I was doing floors for a living, I kind of retired now because I do CHAG. I'm doing other things that have actually got me to a point where I don't have to get on my knees and kick carpet anymore. I was making $150,000 a year, generated income, doing floor covering. You know, that's my capabilities of earning. I've walked away from that now. I made last year about $32,000 in non-taxable income. So my income tax return this year said about $6,000 or $7,000. I am not going to give these guys another penny of taxes that I can avoid giving them for the rest of my life, because you're paying a system that's destroying us, destroying the future of your children. We got to get that mindset into people's heads that what we're doing is all wrong. But until we can get them out of the matrix, we're not going to be able to do that. We got to wake them up.
Yep, guys and gals, that pretty much wraps up the show there. We're down to it again. There's so much that needs to be said. We need to we need more radio hosts out here, you know, keeping the ball rolling. When we drop off the Knights of the Round Table, you start up your version of the Knights of the Round Table and just keep the information out there flowing. Do like Stephen Gibbons and all the wonderful people that show up in the chat room and post links. Share these podcasts with your social media networks and get the word out. There are people out here who are concerned and actually trying to do something to make a difference. But like Barry just said, and Thomas has said, and Raymond and Steve, you got to do it. You got to get up off the couches. It's you, you know. It's me. It's us. We the people. Folks, we got to roll up at her, so we really don't have time to go around the table. But if you throw something in there really quick, that would be great. Who wants to go first?
Networking. Networking, networking, networking. Find people local to you so you can actually do something about it. Read up on tax laws. Take advantage of loopholes. If you can take advantage of loopholes, you stop feeding the machine and you can still continue participating on the things that you actually need out of that system without having to actually give to the mechanisms that are going to destroy you.
Yep. What about you, Steve?
Hard rock.
Raymond? Raymond, he went to sleep.
My last thought, look your neighbors and friends in the eye and open up your heart and share your love with them. Because we need that right now more than anything in this world. We need love. We need to open up to our friends and neighbors and look them in the face and open your heart to them.
Yep.
And they'll feel, guys. They'll feel it.
That's it. Live life and love, man.
I have my mic mute. I'm sorry.
Well, hurry up. We got to get out of here.
All right. I just want to ask one more time. Somebody out there listening to this show is the person that Shaziz, me, Thomas, Steve, Barry, we need you. You have what we need. You know how to organize things. I would really like to see this party come together every year and grow bigger and bigger. And not a soapbox derby, but a putt-putt boat. People showing off their wares, their ingenuity. You,
I want to apply for the job.
All right, cool. We got Barry's gone on it. We'll have to talk about it off the air, folks. We got to roll because somebody else is going to need the microphone. They got a lot to be said. So, everybody, you've been listening to Knights of the Round Table. Stay tuned for the next episode. Share the podcast. And just do like Barry says. Live life and love. It's as simple as that. Peace, everybody.
Woman! Man! Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37, I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up, will you? Shut up!
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot.
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 It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, three dots where we're able. We're routine to call a scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram along.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Ho, ho, ho! Tu saves the table! Continue to serve the table and the knights of the round table.